lights. It's 7 Friday night.
Welcome to another 7 Friday night. If we sound a little more cheery this week, I'd chalk it up to the fact that the 49ers had a bye week and were unable to crush our football spirits. Ben is here, and he's bringing his infectious attitude today. Welcome, Ben.
Hello, all. Hello, Chase. Yes, the mood is lighter this week because we didn't have to suffer through our preferred team's mediocrity. It was also Breeders' Cup weekend, and I made a little cash for a change. So, you know, that's a positive as well. Maybe things are finally turning in my direction as we immerse ourselves in the high school football postseason. But not to be Debbie Downer or anything, but let's be positive. Let's continue on our positive train. Let's start by noting for the good people that you decided it was important to get out to a game this past weekend. So we should congratulate you for that. But you couldn't even find the right playing surface. You covered volleyball. You missed basically the whole season of football. And in the last week of the regular season, you're like, yeah, let me get some volleyball in my life. You're an odd duck, my friend. An odd duck.
Well, I do enjoy a good volleyball match. I'm not going to lie. And yes, I'm trying to keep sportsstarsmag.com from being simply a football publication these days. So that meant getting out to see some championship volleyball, and Marin Catholic and Foothill Pleasanton certainly delivered. Hearty congrats to Foothill for coming from behind to win in 5 sets, nabbing the program's first NCS title since 2010. Shout out to Coach Dusty Collins, who's been there for over 27th year now. Yes. Awesome stuff out of Foothill. You stuck to football this week and even ventured into the Bryson Valley Athletic League.
I did.
Your streak of doozies ended at the Big Little game, though. Well, but it looked like you caught a glimpse of a Pirates team firing on all cylinders.
I did. Yes, I ventured into the eastern reaches of the 925 area code. Region normally reserved for you and a car that can't go further than Kirker Pass. Saturday afternoon in Pirate Stadium. I mean, the Big Little game is as good as it gets when it comes to pomp and circumstance. When I got there, they were doing senior day for the band and cheer teams, and there were well over 100 individuals being recognized. Like the line went almost around the field. It was crazy.
How early did you get there for parking?
I got there 90 minutes before kickoff and parked in my usual spot and just had a leisurely afternoon. I gave myself time to stroll across the street, and get onto the sideline, do all the things right. I followed all the rules for a change. they also recognized the newest class of the Pittsburgh Football Hall of Fame, which meant there were some familiar faces in the house, including Coach Galley, who's officially living his best life these days. Guys just wandering around, shaking hands, kissing babies, coaching flag football. It's good to be Vic Galley these days. as you said, the game itself wasn't much. Antioch had some disciplinary issues during the week that left them without some very key players. And Pitt rolled to a 55-6 win. You mentioned that I saw them firing on all cylinders. I did not, actually. Yeah. Jamar Searcy, who by all accounts, anyone I talk to in Pirates Stadium is a true difference maker as a playmaker in the backfield, didn't play. And Marley Alcantara wasn't quite at full strength, you could tell, but it wasn't much of an issue. We're going to dive into the postseason ramifications in a bit. But, I mean, we gotta do it. We got to congratulate head coach Charlie Ramirez and his staff. That is Pittsburgh High's first 10-0 season ever. They take their history seriously on School Street, and hopefully you can read about it on the Sports Stars website right this instant. But for him to jump in and make history in year number one, I think that's pretty special. That deserves some serious recognition. I have been on good authority. He might pop up on this show in the next couple weeks. So, Coach Ramirez and his staff, got to credit his staff for doing a fantastic job. And they're into the postseason. So, you know, that's what I saw. I took Friday night to stay home, and I'll tell you about that in a little bit. because I got to watch two games instead of one Friday night. But there were other big games all over the place. And since you like to give me crap about my mega scoreboards, you decided to do it all yourself this week. So let us know which five games you picked to highlight.
Wow. I did a little more than that. I didn't go crazy, but I, yeah. We'll start the stock walking section where we're dealing with actual playoff games. Consumnis Oaks of Elk Grove edged Lincoln Stockton 37-34 in what was the best Division One first round game. In Division Two, Del Oro beat Laguna Creek of Elk Grove 37-23. Downey Modesto won 27-10 over Tracy. And Vacaville defeated Elk Grove in Elk Grove 31-19. In Division Three, Roseville edged Mountain House 30-27 in a good 6-11 matchup. Linden, the school that brought us Aaron Judge, defeated Golden Valley of Merced 10-0. Merced and Christian Brothers both won by wide margins, also in that bracket. In Division 4, Kimball Tracy 25, Nevada Union 21. Rio Americano just squeaks by Fairfield 20-19. SAC 52, Sierra Manteca 20, and as you said a few weeks ago, I took that one in the teeth. West Park 47, Wood of Vacaville 35, setting the Panthers up for another date with Destiny at Placer High. In the Central Coast session, we had Live Oak beating Christopher of Gilroy 28-24, blemishing both of our pick records simultaneously. Salinas 21, Hollister 12. As Salinas finishes off that outright title. Los Gatos 38, Menlo Atherton 6. Sarah 43, St. Ignatius San Francisco 10. St. Francis 28, Bellarmine 10. Valley Christian 35, Midi of San Jose, a big goose egg. And then finally, Sacred Heart Prep of Atherton 31. And the Menlo School Knights 6, denying the Knights a 10-0 perfect season. Now, North Coast section scores. We had De La Salle 48, Clayton 0. Saramon Valley beats Monta Vista 34-7 in the Battle of Danville. The Battle of Livermore goes to Granada 35-25 over Livermore High. Windsor 35, Cardinal Newman 21, denying the Cardinals their perfect regular season. Game of the night, probably, in the East Bay was Camp Luna 25, Akalanes 24, setting up a three-way tie that Akalanes gets the automatic berth, as you said last week, based on a preseason draw. Las Lomas 45, Miramonte 7, College Park 35, Alhambra 28, Piedmont 29, Newark Memorial 26 to finish 7-3 after the program went completely dormant for the 2022-23 season. So that's what I got. What are those jumps out of you? Were there any that I omitted that you would have liked to have seen listed?
No. It was a comprehensive look. I give you credit. And yeah, I'm not going to say there were a ton of surprises. I mean, you got to start, if you're going to talk about last week, you got to start in Lafayette, right? I mean, and we talked about it. We made a big deal about it the last couple of weeks, and you can't call it a surprise. Campo beating Akalanis is not a surprise, but I think we both thought that it was Akalanis' year to turn the tables, and here comes Coach Macy and his Cougars doing their thing. So the more things change, the more they stay the same. As I mentioned, I stayed in on Friday night, and I actually got a chance to watch a couple games on my screens, a double action going on. I watched Windsor Cardinal, and I watched Elk Grove Vacaville. The Elk Grove Vacaville game was not a good football game. It just wasn't. It was as sloppy as you get. Elk Grove, really sloppy. A lot of turnovers, but Vacaville, credit to them for pulling out a good road win. Windsor Cardinal, I will say, went exactly as I predicted last week. I was a bit surprised Cardinal tried to blitz Windsor literally the entire game. Like, they brought the heat all night long. And I thought, you know, I talk about Hayden Anderson all the time. I want to give some credit to Judson Anderson because he handled that pressure really, really well. I'd just be really surprised to not see Windsor in the D2 final in NCS. So, here's my surprise from the SJS. I'm surprised you crapped all over my Cinderella story last week because Sac High represent. Okay. Yeah.
That was who I was going to say. So, I mean, that's, I mean, my goodness, talk about peaking at the right time. That the Dragons are in a groove right now. We'll have more on them a little bit later.
You could have picked another, you should have gone with another under the radar VOL team and gone with Kimball.
Yeah.
Kimball getting a good win.
That was a good win for them. Wow. And then obviously you watched it, you mentioned it, but yeah, Windsor obviously winning by multiple scores in that game was pretty impressive too. Yeah. And that El Cerrito, if it comes to pass, an El Cerrito Windsor rematch could be truly epic if we see it. So
it was a phenomenal football game last year. I have nothing to say that it wouldn't be again this year. So,
right.
Like we'll talk about with Coach Edson, El Cerrito does what Windsor does. Windsor throws it, El Cerrito defends the pass. So, but yeah, you left one. I don't think you read this game off.
I did. I left one off. I left one big result off that NCS list. That would be San Marin of Novato finally taking down the Marin County Athletic League nemesis, Marin Catholic, 10-6 in the Battle of Undefeateds. Both teams, was such a momentous win for the Mustangs that we figured we should invite one onto the show this week. So we put out a call to Dominic Ingracia, and he answered it. We had a good chat with the quarterback covering how they pulled out the big win, what has made the San Marin team different than its state champion predecessors, and just how much family strife last week's tilt caused. Let's take a listen.
Well, arguably the result of the week came Saturday afternoon in Marin County, where the San Marin Mustangs finally climbed that hill they've been looking to scale for quite some time now, as they beat Marin Catholic 10-6 to win the MCAL and finish the regular season undefeated. It occurred to us that if one guy would be qualified to talk about what it all means, maybe from both sides, it's the quarterback of those Mustangs, Dominic Ingracia. Welcome to the show, Dom.
Thanks for having me.
All right, well, let's just start with the big win, man. The big win on Saturday. What was it like in that locker room after you guys finally took down that longtime nemesis?
It was crazy all week. Everyone was so dialed in. And all that, everything was so tight, and everyone tried to be perfect the whole entire week. So after that win in the locker room, everyone just erupted, loud, crazy. Everyone was so hyped up.
Were you expecting the low scoring result?
I was not expecting that. We had confidence we were going to win the game, but I would rather say it was going to be a shootout than what it turned out to be. But two great defenses. I mean, what can you expect?
So way back in week one, I saw you guys beat Aquilonis, and the talent and the skill, the togetherness, it was all there. And I recall asking both you and senior defensive back Brady Houlihan what makes this team different. But now that you guys are 10-0 and you're heading into the postseason, I'm gonna ask you again, what makes this the team that finally got over the Marin Catholic hurdle, and what's been the key to going undefeated in the regular season?
The key so far has just been confidence. All our guys are so confident in what they're doing, all their positions, their jobs. We're doing what we can to control as an individual to play together as a team as a whole. So everyone's just does their job. We have great leadership on the team, the best coaching staff around, so many guys that just love the game and want to win more than anything.
How much is that confidence just from, I mean, you guys are 2-time defending state champs right now. Is it just like kind of one of those snowballs that just keeps rolling? The more you win, the more you exactly. have that knowing that yeah. that's there.
Yeah. It just every win we gain confidence, but we stay humble too, because we know anything can happen, and we treat every game the same. Just, we know it's going to be competition no matter what, and just to do our job and get the job done, get out of there and go 1-0 every week.
Who are the guys on this team that inspire you, Dom? Like who are the guys that are making this team go?
I mean, the whole team is, but the coaching staff too, Coach Damari, Coach Rolovich, Coach Garbarino, the whole staff. We have a great staff. And then the other senior captains, Wesley Garten, Matt Giomi, Matt Gooden, all those guys, just huge inspirations. Connor Petrikopoulos, the center, just have stepped up in such a big way. I know it's as 2-time defending state champions, it's hard sometimes because you have big shoes to fill, but we didn't skip a beat at all. We knew we had big shoes to fill, and then we started filling them and knew we had to take over as leaders for the seniors last year.
Chase, you would be confident if you had a kicker named Lars too, okay?
Yes. Lars has been my best friend since kindergarten.
Really?
We always played sports together. And I know I tried to convince him to play football, just come out and kick. And he fell in love with it. Mommy just put in so much work in the summer, and he hasn't missed a kick. So it's great. It's crazy.
He was great week one when I saw you guys. That's for sure. Two big kicks. Yeah.
And I know I was like, I knew he'd be great, but just coming in, like not kicking in a game before, just not really getting live reps, because I know that's different. And to do what he did against Aquilanis, that many kickers can't do at all. It's just crazy. I was so happy for him.
As that confidence continues to build, how do you guys stay humble, trying to and work on avoiding the slip up that, you know, you can't, I know you guys want to look ahead to that rematch with Aquilanis, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to be the key for you guys as you guys try and get to that game?
Like you said, just the key is not looking ahead, just focusing on the team you're playing in, just watching film on them, knowing what they do, and just going out and competing every single week, just focusing on the team that you're playing that week instead of looking ahead. I know Aquilanis has been, it was a good game week one, it'll be a good game again, but just can't look really at that right now. Just got to focus up on the teams we're playing, Kennedy week one, and whoever we end up playing week two.
I know he couldn't make it to the game because it was UC Davis football at their 4 p.m. game with Portland State. But just how much was your brother, Michael, a Marin Catholic grad, in your ear all week during, like, leading up to the game?
He messed with me a little bit, but I know he wanted me to perform. He wished me good luck before the game and stuff, but he knew that it could happen too, and I always told him it would. I wish it got to be against him, but it didn't. So that's cool, yeah.
How much do you? I mean, you guys are similar in some ways, but you're also very different quarterbacks. How much have you taken from him as you've grown up into the quarterback position?
Everything. When he was getting training done, me and my dad would just be watching him. My dad would be showing me what he's doing. I've looked up to him so much with everything he's done and all the success he had. Just watching him, learning from him. And he's helped me out so much.
Chase, did you ever get a chance to see him play live?
Yes, I saw him play. I saw him play against McClyman's at Mac. I saw that game.
Two quarterbacks.
You guys are both very, very, very accomplished.
Yeah,
quality quarterbacks, man.
Capable of taking over games for sure. We know the goal at San Marin is a state title because you guys have been there, you've done that. And very few schools have been so consistently good that three in a row is even a possibility. So what would it mean, not just to you guys as players, but the thing that I've talked about since watching that first state game a couple years ago is just how much support you have in the Novato community. Like, there aren't a lot of high school football teams that get that kind of support from the community. So what would it mean to you guys to be able to get back to that level, and just how cool is it for you as players to see the San Marin community rallying around you once again?
Yeah, obviously that's our goal, to win a state championship, and the community is, it's crazy. Like every game, just soaking it in before, just looking up in the stands, hearing the roar after big plays. Like if you get knocked down, you don't know where the ball's going, then you see the crowd erupt. It's the best feeling in the world. And I remember looking, some college coaches came to watch our homecoming game, and they even said, I've seen few places like this, just with how the community comes together and how everyone comes to the games. It's awesome. And just everywhere you are, it's just people know who you are and always so nice to you. It's awesome.
I'm assuming they woke up early for the Marin Catholic game.
Yeah. Yeah, I guarantee it. People, like my grandpa, I know he's talking about, he was trying to get in. He's like, no one left from the JV game or the freshman game. So all the spots are full and everyone's there. That's the most, my dad said he saw an MC game ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we will all be watching you guys and seeing if you guys can pull it off. And I know that, if the Aquilanis rematch occurs, I know Ben's gonna want to see Act Two. So
there's too many games to watch. There's just too many games. I need cloning. It was good the first time. It'll be good again. Promise. Yep.
All right. Good luck the rest of the way, Dom. We thank and thanks for taking the time. And we know you got to get to a film session, so we're gonna let you go.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys.
Tell Coach Damari we say hello.
I will. Bye.
See you.
Bye.
We understand an upside-down world, but they're writing us off before we get to the starting line. A stalled generation? Who do you think is going to fix all this? We will, because our future is the future. The next greatest generation is now.
Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Another big thank you to Dominic Ingracia for joining us as the postseason gets underway. Busy week for teams in Northern California, so we thank him for taking the time. As we've mentioned throughout the show so far, this is the week that the NCS and the CCS get their playoffs rolling. And on Sunday, we got to check out the bracket reveals. No show. I wasn't invited. Still a little sad. And see what it all looked like. In fact, I was in the grocery store looking at my phone and forgetting to get various items when the brackets came out. I'm sure, Chase, you can't
I can relate. That. Yeah. I've been there before.
So we're going to break these down in comprehensive fashion in a second, but let me set it up with a few notes. The biggest question on Sunday, of course, was what the NCS would do in their open Division I bracket, and the committee elected to point us towards a De La Salle-San Ramon Valley rematch by slotting the Wolves at number two. Pittsburgh ended up at number three, which means the Pirates will be favored to see either the Spartans or the Wolves in the D1 final. Other NCS top seeds include El Cerrito in D2, Marin Catholic in D3, San Marin in D4, Miramani in D5, St. Vincent de Paul in D6, and Clear Lake in D7. Over in the CCS, the first year of adopting an open D1 split bracket like the NCS resulted in Sarah and St. Francis being pointed towards a rematch for the open bid and a very intriguing D1 bracket led by number three seed St. Ignatius. 5-5 Archbishop Midi landed the top seed in D2. 4-6 Menlo Atherton is head of the class in D3. And we can talk in a bit about how silly that is, even if they win at all. 5-5 Palo Alto is top seed in D4, and Woodside is the number one in Division 5. So that's where we're at. Chase, any surprises or general musings that you see in these brackets?
Less surprises, more musings. I didn't see any real big surprises on the NCS side, for at least. I was bummed from El Diablo, who had an awesome revival season, only to be rewarded with the first round pairing against an Alcalanes team that is obviously rated one division too low. The Don should be in D3, just like Campos should be in D2. It's my one complaint with how NCS does things, and there really needs to be some sort of way to adjust on the fly when things are that obvious. Also, Ben, how great do you feel about a playoff system that hands a 5 seed to a team that went 4-6 and finished 4th in its league, while the 2nd and 3rd place teams from the same league turn in their gear for the winter? I get why it happened, but does it make it any less annoying?
You're flying the flag for your neighborhood.
Maybe. Again. Maybe. I'm just saying it's a little weird. Will you stipulate that it's a little weird?
Yes, I will. And you've got some, you have some serious support from the folks in Brentwood. No doubt about it.
I would imagine. It's kind of a, it makes you scratch your head a little bit, even though I understand it, but it's still weird.
Yeah, I'm with you.
CCS, everything pretty much played out as I thought. And I'll say some of my thoughts on those games for a little bit later. How about you?
Chase, I have grievances. And I'm gonna start with the CCS. Midi very well could indeed be the best D2 team out there. Not gonna dispute that. And Menlo Atherton could very well be the best team in D3. And I'm sure Pally is going to be a worthy favorite in D4. And I know the CCS uses their point system, yada, yada, yada. Okay. I'm not going to say that a 4-6 team should be a top seed in any postseason bracket anywhere ever. Ever. That is not earned. I want to be clear here. I think if I had to pick a team to win that bracket, Menlo Atherton would probably be my pick. But if you schedule up and you lose 6 games, you did not set your team up to earn a top seed. That's just not. They lost 6 games. Midi plays in the West Catholic Athletic League and did not land in the D1 bracket. I get it. They're playing a different caliber of opponent than the rest of the D2 schools. But Live Oak is 9-0 Menlo School is 9-1, and that's the 4-5 matchup in that bracket.
Exactly.
I just think we're caught in the middle a little here. Like, should the playoffs be a reflection of what happened or what the point systems and the computers tell us should have happened? So, yeah, it's just, those are awesome teams. I want to be very clear. I'm not knocking those teams, but one of them lost 6 games, and they're probably going to win that bracket. That means the bracket is flawed. So that's that. In the NCS, I'm not terribly surprised by anything. The times that I saw San Ramon Valley in Pittsburgh, I thought San Ramon Valley was the number 2 team in the NCS this year. Let me caveat that in a big way, which I've been saying since the weekend. I never saw Pittsburgh with Jamar Searcy in the lineup, and I am told that makes a very big difference. I do think Pitt got a bit disrespected for going 10-0, and again, I think the NCS is similarly caught in between a few concepts right now.
Yeah,
the blend of wanting to do the competitive equity thing like everyone else while keeping geography and enrollment in the league structures probably hurt the Pirates in this case because they play in the BVAL instead of the EBAL. I would not penalize San Ramon for losing to De La Salle, but it feels again like we're rewarding a team for what we think should happen versus what did happen. That said, I can actually apply the eye test here, and if I was making the call, I probably would have done the same. I told some people that on the sideline in Pittsburgh on Saturday. And good news for all of us. I would wager that we see these two against each other in a couple weeks, so we can all buy a ticket and watch.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I think that I'm right with you there. It's definitely a frustrating scenario when you see those tweener choices.
Like, they're going to win those 4-win teams, 5-5, 4-6. They're going to win those divisions because they're rewarded for scheduling up. And I guess on some level, we need to do that, right? We need to reward teams for scheduling up. But there's a 9-1 team that's going, what?
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Like, we won 9 games.
So, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
So let's break this thing down to in the way that we did last week for the SJS. And we will start with our top Bay Area first round matchup. You want to go first or you want me to go first?
Sure. I'll start. The best first round matchup that I saw, and there's some good ones, but I think for me it was in the CCS Division I open field where Los Gatos is hosting Reardon of San Francisco. That's just quite a pairing on the Division I side, which is the 4-5 matchup. Yeah, I said hosting, so it's at Los Gatos. And both of those teams are just hot at the right time, and they're both on the incline. And I think that's definitely going to be a good one. And hopefully I'm not stealing another one when I throw in the Division II. It's hard not to like Menlo School going to Live Oak also. Mm-hmm. I think that's going to be a really good matchup as well. Yep. How about you?
Yeah, I have a tie here. I'm going to bail out, and I'm going to take the entire non-open portion of the open D1 bracket in the CCS. Yeah. Your comments are spot on. Number 3 St. Ignatius against number 6 Valley Christian, just super intriguing. I'll talk about it a little more in picks later. Our friend Darren Sabager at the Bay Area News Group made the point to me on Saturday that Valley Christian might be playing some of the best football in the CCS right now. And yeah, you've made that comment in past weeks as well. So that's going to be a really good game. Los Gatos Reardon, awesome. For as much as I'm going to rail on the CCS bracket, let's praise it for rewarding the winner of the Los Gatos Wilcox game this year rather than penalizing the winner. So they got that part right, I guess.
It's also refreshing that they're doing the same thing the NCS is doing now. That actually not they're not cannibalizing, you know, 7 of their top 8 teams.
Right. Yeah, so. I agree. If I had to give you an NCS game, it would be Los Lomas at Ukiah in D2.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Coach Longero.
I had that one coming up.
Yeah, he predicted this game. He predicted this game to me when I walked off his field a couple weeks ago. I mean, we're going to call that the Coach's Bowl, right? With him and Coach Cronin.
Yeah.
It's two of our friends and two fantastic football teams. So That will be a good one. Before we move on, can I pose a hypothetical for week one in the playoffs? What if, let me say this a little lower so that I can hide it, maybe. What if Camp Lindo wins this week? like stranger things have happened than Coach Macy coaching the Cougars to an unexpected win. Like, if he wins this week, would the entire town of Moraga fall into a Coach Macy-sized black hole? And how would this affect the argument that Campo doesn't belong in D1? Like, this was the Division II final last year, Chase.
Yeah.
Campo beat them 2 years ago. So yeah. It's not even alternate reality. You know that's what? Like, it could happen.
The thing is that we would look at each other. We wouldn't be that. I mean, I guess this year, kind of maybe we'd be a little surprised, but Macy does this to us all the time. So
yeah, he does. I'm just saying. I said it kind of low, but I'm just saying.
I'll let you go first on the next one. How about a non-championship matchup that you'd like to see happen?
Yeah, I've got, as always, I have a couple options here. I mentioned Ukiah, and Coach Cronin has gone back to Cardinal before, but what if he takes a resurgent Ukiah back for a 3-7 semi?
Yeah.
Like, that would be a little different for a team that hasn't won a league title since 85. I'm actually going to go off the board a little, and I'm going to go to D5 in NCS, where I think an Alhambra-Miramani semifinal could be really good. Alan Hearn is a proven coach. Bo Blau has been a major playmaker, and I think the Bulldogs could compete with the Mats. We'll know a little bit more after the opening round because Alhambra plays a Piedmont team that Miramani beat 48-6. Also, I'm going to use this moment to shout out Jordan Seiden and the Highlanders. That program did not even play last year. They do not have a home field, and they are 7-3 and in the playoffs. Shout out Piedmont from this former staff writer at the Piedmonter.
Yeah, that's we mentioned that in the scoreboard too. I mean, good for them. That was tremendous.
Yep.
All right. So I think, I mean, honestly, the potential finals are where it's at in the NCS. Though I guess a rematch between Cal and Pitt could be good. I'd be down to see that again. Obviously. I wrote down actually Las Lomas Cardinal Newman. Although I acknowledge that the flip side of Coach Cronin coming back to his old stomping ground with a Ukiah team, like you said, that hasn't won since the 80s would certainly be good as well. Let's not leave the SJS out though. What's the matchup you're most interested in this week on that side of the NorCal map?
Mine is a dead heat. If I were in the area this weekend, I would absolutely be spending Friday night back in Elk Grove to see Monterey Trail play Intercom. Yeah. That's going to be a really good game. And conflicting reports on my other game, the SJS website, when I looked at it on Friday night, which makes no sense, the SAC B had it on Saturday, which makes a lot more sense, but it would be Del Oro at Jesuit, because that is just a fantastic football game. So, but there, I left your favorite Buffaloes for you.
Actually, the Buffaloes. I'm not going there.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going there. That's going to be a tremendous game, though. And we certainly will talk about that in picks. But for me, it's got to be West Park at Placer, man.
Oh, God.
I just love the history that's been built up between those two programs in these last 3 years. Yeah. And no disrespect to the Hillman, but I think it'd be a great story if the Panthers finally get over that hump. So Sam Marin did it, Marin Catholic, to Marin Catholic, and it's West Park's turn. Get past their demons, for sure. Now it's time to transition to our second guest of the show, the real star power of this ensemble, Coach Terry Edson. The coach gives us the scoop on his weekend at the Breeders' Cup, shares his thoughts on how some of the NCS seedings broke, and also shares a little bit of dumb and smart football. So here we go.
Well, we welcome in the third talking head in this pundit stew of ours as Coach Terry Edson has returned from the Southland and a weekend activity that I am exceedingly jealous of. Since I'm leading a segment this week, I get to start with the topic that I'm most interested in. Terry, how was Breeders' Cup Saturday at the Great Race Place?
Well, you know, a Saturday at the Great Race Place is like a little slice of heaven there, Ben. Beautiful day, little toasty out there down in LA, but me and I don't know what the final attendance looked like, around 40,000. I didn't get the official attendance, but you know, we had I got clubhouse admission, no seats, just so I could walk around. And the best thing was, you know, most people to go to Breeders' Cup, most horsemen like to go to San Diego every day. They're not going to spend the Breeders' Cup prices. They stay away. So I got all the rookies there. So I was able to secure a nice spot right on the finish line for every race. It was beautiful. And if I reached over the railing, I could have touched the people sitting in the boxes on the finish line. And they paid $5,000 for those. I paid much, much, much less to basically see the race from the same vantage point. So I thought that was a win on my part. But I had a great time. Got to see all the great trainers, all the great horses. Well, even though I didn't win a race, but, you know, that's besides the point.
Okay.
But I don't know if you heard about what happened today. It was unbelievable. I mean, I'm not going to get in the whole story about Cody's wish.
I did. Yes.
But the young kid who the horse was named after, who was, you know, was supposed to, with his disease, pass away when he was 2 and made it to he's 18, but he was there at the races in the winner's circle and on the flight back home. And it was Cody's wish's last race.
Dang.
And the young man passed away on the ride home. And I just have to believe those serendipity. I mean, he probably knew it was the horse's last race. And, you know, you have to wonder sometimes if he was just hanging on to see his last race, which he won. It was a great moment. Yeah.
Won by
anybody's out there. Go look up YouTube, Cody's Wish. That's a story that'll pull at your heartstrings every time.
Well, the postseason has arrived for local high school football and the De La Salle Spartans. You guys are starting with James Logan this week, but I think for those of us who are outside observers, we're looking a week further down to a potential rematch against San Ramon Valley. We'll start with the topic that we talked about last week. I guess nobody's surprised to see this game lined up again, but were you at all surprised to see San Ramon Valley get the 2 seed over the Pirates of Pittsburgh?
Once you understand, like, when they did the seeding, okay, if Liberty and Antioch did not make the playoffs, then you're not surprised at all, right? Because that's where Pittsburgh Leafs come from. I don't know if Pittsburgh could do it, but when they scheduled, I mean, the teams they played against, their overall record is 50-51. So they did not have a strong strength of schedule. They played Cal High to a 38-35. And of course, San Ramon just beat them 14-0. But I think the Liberty game, it was 14-0 in half. And I think San Ramon beat Liberty. I know they beat them pretty handily. And the only loss for San Ramon is, you know, which as soon as they made us the number one seed, then it just, I think it falls right into place. If we're the number one seed, then you got to pick the team that's lost one game. And the only loss they have is to the number one seed in overtime. So I think it becomes pretty simple. Once we're number one, then San Ramon, I think it's just logical that they're number two.
And now you got a scheme for Luke Baker again.
Yeah, well, we'll have some tricks up our sleeve for Mr. Baker. I'll just tell you that right now. He's not rushing for 171 yards. He'll probably throw for over more than 190, but he's not rushing for 171 yards.
We'll have you take a peek at maybe a few other divisions. There's going to be plenty of opportunity for you to comment on the Open Division 1 bracket over the coming weeks. So I'm curious about your thoughts on some of the other NCS number one seeds. Which of the following top seeds do you think has the best shot at a title? El Cerrito in D2, Marin Catholic in D3, San Marin in D4, Miramonte in D5. All of them have pretty strong foils.
I didn't have a chance to look at all the playoffs today because we were pretty busy. Yeah. But who's the number two seed in Division II?
Windsor. El Cerrito, Windsor.
I know Windsor is a good program. And they do a good job, but we've played against El Cerrito and it was on short notice, which I think was an advantage for us. I if El Cerrito stays healthy, I just don't, I don't see, they're so athletic at that division. I just don't see how it's possible that anyone's going to be able to stay with them. You know, they have a decent quarterback. They got skilled players and, you know, they got a decent line too. I just don't see anybody. I don't know how you're going to score against them. They're so athletic. I was really impressed with El Cerrito. The coaches do a good job, and they, outside of the game against us, they basically rolled over everybody.
They do the thing that Windsor does. It's the perfect matchup. Windsor has big physical receivers that they try to get the ball to quick, and El Cerrito has athletic defensive backs who can handle that. So it's
But are they going to be able to handle the El Cerrito running attack?
That's the question.
Avery is it. He keeps the ball in the field. He keeps the drives going. That kid's the real deal.
That's the question. Yeah. Last week, we'll transition to picks here. And last week, you gave us a 4-5 shot as your best bet at the Breeders' Cup. But if you had to put odds on these 4-5 matchups, neither would be odds on. We will start with the teams you definitely know a bit about. Number 4, Clayton Valley heads to number 5, Cal High. This game is in San Ramon because when these two met a few weeks ago on that very field, Clayton Valley won 33-24, and then it sounds like they proceeded to put the ugly in ugly Eagles with their celebration. An EBAL showdown turned postseason throwdown. Who you got?
Well, you know, you gave me two games where both teams had played each other, correct? So the question you got to ask yourself, you know, and if you're a pundit, which I'm really not, but they just played 2 weeks ago. So what's changed, right? What do you look at the team? So one thing that's changed is I know that they lost one of their best receivers at the end of our game, you know, number 5. Looked like he had a severe ankle sprain. So that's going to make a difference for them. And the question is going to be, you know, but, you know, I know Clayton Valley had a decent time running the ball against Cal High. So the question once again is what's going to change. And I think this is where I really have to look at the playoff experience of the coaches. And I think Danny and Cal Cagno and his defensive coordinator, Ned Milan, I think they'll be able to come up with a decent game plan. And this is what else has changed. I really believe this. If Clayton Valley would have just won the game and shook hands, I would say Clayton Valley is going to win the game. But now they've got Cal High probably more fired up than they've been all year. They're going to have Cal High's fan base more fired up than they've been all year. So, you poke the bear. It's never a good idea to poke the bear. And so you got two experienced coaches. You got a team that's probably has a whole different mindset going into this game. So I'm looking for Cal High on the upset here.
Now we take you to the other 4-5 coin flip in the sack walking section. This one might be a 90-minute special with how much these teams like to run the football. We've got 7-3 Manteca hosting 6-5 Granite Bay. Manteca had a much needed bye after eking out a 28-27 win at Oakdale on October 27th. And then Granite Bay rolled to a 49-12 win over Rodriguez Fairfield last Friday night. Granite Bay went 0-3 against the Sierra Foothill League's Big Three, but it was only by a combined 28 points. Manteca only lost to Central Catholic by 4. And as you mentioned, these teams did play each other way back early in the season, I think week 2 maybe. And Manteca
won 25th.
Manteca won 15-0. So,
So what's changed, right? And once again, you got to ask yourself what's changed since the 15-0. And I would say, as I looked at the schedules and I looked at the games, there is no doubt to me the team that made the most progress towards the end of the year was Granite Bay. And their games against Rockland, their game against Folsom, they've showed that they've improved tremendously. I just think that Granite Bay is on the upswing. They have the advantage. I believe that. I think it's an advantage that they saw how, you know, they lost the game. I know exactly how I'm thinking on the Manteca side. I'm going like, well, I shut them out. Why do I want to make any major differences? So now it's Granite Bay's turn. Like, how are you going to counterpunch? I do not believe the bye was helpful in the sense of they didn't know who they were playing. So, and like I said, at the end of the year, I'm telling you, when you get in a rhythm, I think byes are, I couldn't stand byes. Remember the old days, we'd have a game, a bye, a game, a bye, a game, drove me nuts. It's like, oh my God, it was terrible. So I think Granite Bay playing last week is actually an advantage for them. I think they're feeling confident. I think they know they've gotten better. You know what they're saying right now on the field every day. We're not the team that lost to Manteca. You know, the real Granite Bay team is going to show up, and I believe that. I think Granite Bay is got a great chance to win this game, so I'm going with Granite Bay. So Manteca and Clayton Valley are now just jumping up and down, thanking me for doing that, and I'd just like to say you're welcome.
Young Dominic Catalico, the freshman, I believe he's head coach Joe Catalico's son, has moved into the quarterback spot since then, too, for Granite Bay. So
that makes a difference as well. There's no doubt about it. Quarterback changes, and they've been winning with him at quarterback.
Yeah. So we'll give we've got lots of ground to cover today. So we'll give the good people the abridged version of dumb football. You've been in transit most of the weekend anyway. So what's your top dumb football moment for this week?
Well, my new team is the Dallas Cowboys. That's become my new latest dumb football compatriot here. I can always depend on the Cowboys to do something dumb. So I don't know. I don't know about all the, you know, the analytics and what it says. All I do know is I had no basic math. Okay. And so the Cowboys are 4th-and-2 on the Philadelphia, like 2.5-yard line. And I don't care what analytics says. There's a difference between 4th-and-goal at the 1, at the foot line, and the 2.5-yard line. Okay. On a good defense on the road. Now they're down by 11. So call me crazy, but you need a field goal and a touchdown with the 2-point conversion. And there's like 9.5 minutes to go in the game. So you need one of those, I would think, right there and then. So kick the field goal, trust your defense, and go from there. But no, let's not do that. Let's go for it. And of course, they catch it, the ball at the 1-inch line, and they don't get the touchdown. So now Philadelphia gets the ball. The Cowboys do come back down and they score, which, you know, good for their defense. They stopped them. They scored right away. So now they go for the 2-point conversion. Obviously, they're down 11 and they don't get it. So if you do the math now, Ben, they're down 5 points. Okay. Yeah. So two things are equally true, that you can get 5 points to win the game. You can get 2 field goals because 3 + 3 = 6. Okay. Or you could score a touchdown, which is 6 + the extra point. You go for 2, I'm sure. Well, try to make a 3-point game. So with now 4 minutes left to go in the game, the Cowboys are on like the 32-yard line and it's 4th down, but it's not 4th-and-1. It's not 4th-and-3. It's not 4th-and-4. It's 4th-and-8. Okay. This is professional football. I don't know what the analytics says. I'm telling you, the percentage of getting 1st downs on 4th-and-8 versus kicking a field goal, trust me when I say it's easier to kick a field goal. And if you don't make the field goal, nothing's been lost because you still need 6 points to win the game. But if you have a good defense and trust your defense, which, by the way, something analytics doesn't show you, is the Cowboys defense was getting better and better as the game was going on. And you could see Philadelphia was in that uh-oh mode of thinking. So what did the Cowboys do? Of course they kicked field. Of course they didn't. Okay. They go for it. They don't get it. And of course, if they were to kick the field goal, play defense, they had 3 timeouts. So they had plenty of time to get the ball back. What yard line did the Cowboys end up on? The 10-yard line. Well, they got sacked and all that, but they got down to the 10. Do you think they could have kicked a 27-yarder for the game-winning field goal? Probably, but no, they weren't in that situation because somehow someone told McCarthy, we need to go for it. I don't understand it. Trust your defense. They get paid to play too. Say, I kicked the field goal and I felt like we could kick it and stop them. We had all our timeouts. All you need in the NFL is like 35 seconds to get in field goal range these days. And he didn't. And here we go with another Cowboys L. I'm sure Jerry Jones was fuming. I'm just like, what else is new? It's the new way of football. How I should write a book, How to Lose a Game 6,000 Different Ways.
New York Times bestseller. I can see it now.
I just don't understand. Players play. Let your players play.
I had never seen this weekend. And I'm wondering if this might qualify as smart football, Terry. So the end of the Texans game, Texans were playing
Jaguars.
The Jaguars. No, was it the Jags?
The Jags. I mean, not the Jaguars. I mean the Bucks.
Did you see Jags how this game ended? So Stroud threw a touchdown pass with 6 seconds left to give Houston the lead. And instead of kicking, so that put him up by 2 points, 39-37. Instead of kicking the extra points or going for two, they lined up for two and he took a knee. So that I'm guessing so that they couldn't risk getting the PAT blocked in return for a tying score. Because there's only 6 seconds left. So they decided just to not take the PAT at all. And they kicked the kickoff and let them do the
with 6 seconds. Play. Yeah,
there was 6 seconds left.
Then they only have time to do the lateral.
And I couldn't figure out why. And then I realized, well, maybe they're just trying to keep from getting it blocked in return for a 2 point tying conversion. I guess
that's exactly what they were thinking.
Yeah,
that's exactly what they were thinking because the only way they felt they could lose the game or get the game tied was to get it blocked and returned.
Right.
Can I give you the real answer here, Chase?
Oh, why? Was the kicker hurt?
What was the line on the game?
Oh, come on.
It was three.
Two and a half.
Two and a hook? Three, I thought.
It was 2.5.
Oh, that hook.
So you're thinking the Texans bet on, you're trying to tell me that the Texans bet on the Bucks? Okay.
Yeah, no. I do not pay enough attention to the Houston Texans or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to make that assertion. Well, I do
because we have a player on the Texans. So.
Ah, yes.
Henry Toto. So.
Yes.
Well, that is smart play. And actually, one of our players did something smart as well. We had, there was a 4th and 16, and they're on their own 20, and they snapped the ball over Clayton Valley's head, and I have my defense out there. It was for my punt return. But I had – the backups were out, and he snapped over the punter's head. And instead of trying to punt it, he tried to throw the ball downfield. And one of our DBs, and he is my special teams captain, so I'll give myself a pat on the back for making my special teams captain, knocked the ball down so we could get the ball back at the 20-yard line. I went, oh, my God. We, as a high school kid, did something smart. I love it. Yeah, so that was a – props to him. Parker Belke did that. So good for Parker. Maybe he listens to the show and he's learned some things along the way.
I hope so.
All right, Coach. Good luck this week in your opener. And we'll be talking to you next week.
Yeah, it's that time of year. There's a little nip in the air. There's the lights are coming on the football field at 4:45. The trees are changing. It's football season. It's playoff time. You know that. So looking forward to it.
All right, Coach.
Okay, boys. I'll see you next week.
All right.
Bye.
Okay. So we gave Terry the business with this week's picks, but this is the moment in which if we were a professional wrestling franchise, Chase's music would hit and he would appear to change the entire show. What new rules do you have for us since I'm winning going into the playoffs, oh, commissioner?
Well, as you know, I have suggested a slight change in that I'm getting rid of the challenge round only because I feel like we've done that before when we've reached the playoffs because all the games are good.
And, this whole show is a challenge.
So I was going to suggest one pick each from each of the three big sections. One NCS, one CCS, one SJS. and just one of them has to be a lock.
This isn't even a play to reverse the standings. This is a play to spend less time preparing.
That's not...
This is the time of year where you're supposed to up your game, Chase, not retreat in a blaze of beige.
Blaze of beige. You're going for the episode title right there, aren't you?
Yeah, I've had time to prepare this week. So, yes, I'm going first because you're shrinking, Violet. I'm going to start in the CCS, and I'm going to take on the game that I mentioned earlier because I think it's a really good matchup, and I'm not scared. Valley Christian heads to St. Ignatius on Friday night in the Division I 3-6 matchup. The first game was a 15-14 win for St. Ignatius in San Jose. But man, it's hard not to like the defense that Valley Christian is playing these days. SI won 3 in a row before losing to Sarah to end the regular season. So this pick is going to be less of an indictment of St. Ignatius and more a pick based on a team that I feel like is trending in the right direction. Give me Valley Christian in this one.
Yeah, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that if they could just figure out how to score some points, they'd be dangerous. And
yep.
35 points, that'll do it.
Yep.
All right. Well, I will start in the NCS. Coach Edson stole a little of my thunder on this one. I'm going to start with the EBL Mountain rematch between Cal and Clayton Valley. As we said earlier, these two teams are back in Saramone 2 weeks after the visiting Ugly Eagles topped the Grizzlies 33-24 and then followed it with some questionable sportsmanship choices. But this ought to be a good one. And if I were going off of second half trends, I actually might lean Clayton here, but I'm not. Similar to what Coach Edson said, I'm going with the belief that the Grizzlies coaching staff will make the necessary adjustments and they'll feed off of a little bit of that energy that Coach talked about what happened last time. And I think they are going to figure it out and take advantage of the gift home game they were given and get the W. So I am taking Cal.
Well, all three of us are going to weigh in on that game this week, and I'm going to save that because I'm like Ron Burgundy and I read what is written. I am going to go to the SJS, and I'm taking you back to Power Inn Road, or maybe it's a little bit closer to Calvine Road since that's where the field actually is, in Elk Grove. It's number 4 Monterey Trail against number 5 Indercombe. Since watching Monterey Trail knock off Grant a couple weeks ago, I've been effusive in my praise for the Mustangs, and I'll pat myself on the back. I think that's well-placed because Monterey Trail is really, really good. But one guy we haven't talked nearly enough about this year is Indercombe quarterback Ricky Cole, who has 39 touchdown passes and over 600 yards rushing this year. The thing that Grant did not have against Monterey Trail was the threat of a quarterback on the move. And I think that makes a difference. This is going to test my theory about schedule versus winning because there's no doubt Monterey Trail has played a better schedule. I'm actually going to take the slight upset here, if you want to call it that. I'm taking Indercombe in this one.
This is incredibly topical by you, even though you didn't know that you were making it topical. But there's a rumor that Ike Dodson may be returning to the Sports Stars Mag website this week with a feature on Indercombe and Ricky Cole.
Are you? No, I can't say it. Just move along. Ike, it's glad to have you back, my friend. Let's keep moving. I wrote a story about Pittsburgh High this week, and if you see it in 3 weeks, this is the reason why, okay?
Ike hasn't even filed yet. You're fine. You're going to get up first. Your story will post first.
Bumped by volleyball. We've already been over this. Anyway, go. What's your next pick?
All right. I'll go Sac Joaquin section next since we're right there. Maybe this is foolish since they burned me last week, but I'm gonna pick against the hottest team in the Division IV playoffs, the Sacramento Dragons.
Jesus, what are you doing?
I'm banking on top-seeded Escalon to find a way to slow down the Radcliffe Army and advance to the semifinals. I'm going to take the Cougars, and I'm going to make them my lock. And if Sac High proves me wrong again, we can bring all the Radcliffes on, and I can apologize to each of them personally.
As I said earlier, I was disgusted with this shunning of my Cinderella story last week, and You're taking a 1/9. Like, okay, fine.
I know.
Cool.
But they are red hot. Okay. They've got some mojo.
All right. So yes, I have to finish in the NCS. I'm taking on the same game you took on. I'm a little concerned that we're all on the same side of the street here, but as I talked about earlier, winning games versus strength of schedule is coming up again. Yes, Clayton Valley played a really good competitive schedule. I'm here for it. But on 5-win team as the number 4 seed gives me the heebie-jeebies. It just does. Plus, I have the eye test here. I saw Cal get their best win of the season against your aforementioned Escalon band of brothers. And I saw Clayton fall at home to Jesuit. Coach Edson with the key injury update there. If one of the Lovett brothers is not available, that is a big deal for Clayton Valley. I am betting on Coach Calcagno, just as my colleagues have, to flip the script. And that, I think, will set up a orange and black rematch next week at Pirate Stadium.
Yep, that'll be good. All right, I will finish in the Central Coast section. And my CCS pick comes from Division One, where I get a chance to go against our favorite Beep Boop machine. The computer has number 4 Los Gatos beating Reardon 35-31. And I'm not buying it. Reardon didn't just play in the stronger league. It played winning football in that league. This isn't the case of a 4-6 WCAL team being a favorite in a smaller division. This is a 7-3 Crusaders team that only had NorCal losses to Sarah and St. Francis. And the St. Francis one was only by 7 points. So I think Los Gatos will keep us close, but Reardon finds a way to get the W.
I don't think I would have gone with you on this one.
No? All right. No,
I don't. I think Los Gatos didn't. So the winner of their league this year did not get penalized for winning their league like they did last year. and I like what Coach Krell's got going. I don't know. Gut feeling.
You've said that in previous episodes, though, so you're not pulling that out of nowhere.
That's right. So, well, that's going to be a good game.
Yep, for sure. All right, let's get to the final read, and then we will jump in with some final thoughts.
Do we even have time for the final read? We've been rambling on forever.
I'll make it quick, Ben. So once again, I'd like to thank San Marin quarterback Dominic Ingracia for coming in, sneaking us in right before his film session, and then obviously Coach Edson for dropping by as always. We build 7 Friday Night using Spotify for Podcasters, formerly Anchor, but the show is available on several platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Pocket Casts, and Radio Public. If you listen to shows on one of those platforms, search for 7 Friday Night, and please rate and subscribe. To leave a voice message for our show, visit podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/7FridayNight, the number 7. Let us know what you've liked so far and if there's any players you want to see featured or interviewed on the show. Each of our episodes also get their own dedicated page on Sports Stars Magazine's web home, sportsstarsmag.com. You can stream the episode there or find links to the various other platforms. Our main cover art features photography and design by yours truly. And finally, our theme music was produced and performed by Dustin Phillips. And that wraps that up. So, Ben, how about some final thoughts? I think you have a few this week.
Yes, I've certainly talked enough, but I first want to extend a hearty 7 Friday Night get well soon to one of our favorites, the Jet, Javion Thomas. He took a bad hit in Cal's game at Oregon, had to go to the hospital with what was reported as a neck injury. He was up and walking around by the time the weekend concluded, though. He's home, and hope that Javion gets well soon. We really like him from our interactions with him at McClyman's and just wanted to wish him well in his recovery. Wanted to say that, but I also want to shout out another of my favorite runners. It has been reported that Mount Diablo running back Herschel Turner, and can we put this to bed? The young man's Twitter account has a C in his name, okay? That's how his name is spelled. He set the NCS regular season rushing record with 2,957 yards and 42 touchdowns this year. He broke a mark held by a young man I knew very well and I am very fond of Salesian Richmond's Javid Best. So I want to say I'm really happy that I got a chance to spend some time with Herschel this year and tell his story a little bit. Those who know me know if I'm going to put you in the same sentence as Javid, you're not only a good football player, you are a good person. So I'm really happy for Herschel and the Red Devils. They are in the playoffs as well. Next up on the record list is one of your favorites, Chase, and one of my favorites, Concord High's Alito Thompson. Who has the full season NCS mark and is another young man we thoroughly enjoyed watching. So,
yes, sir.
That's it for me. I feel like I've left it all on the field. You wrote us a whopper, and I went straight up BK, have it your way. Are you actually going to buy a new fancy pen like you like to use and maybe join some of us on the sidelines this week?
I'm hoping to do so, yes.
Okay.
As you mentioned, we've rambled on prolifically for a while now, so I am not going to belabor it anymore. Let's get to the football. We'll be back next week to talk all about it.
All right. See you next week. I had a joke about Mike McCarthy going to the Chase Bryson School of Time Management all queued up, but I didn't get a chance to fire it off.